Have you ever wondered what the stars have to say about your favorite artists and writers? Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa, where I, your host and astrologer, Issa Nakazawa, read and interpret astrological birth charts of luminaries like W. Kamau Bell, Gia Tolentino, and so many more. You'll discover how astrology can unlock fascinating insights about these stars, and who knows, maybe you'll learn a little bit more about yourself. Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa wherever you get your podcasts.
In order to support our show, we need the help of some great advertisers. And we want to make sure those advertisers are ones you'll actually want to hear about. We need to learn a little bit more about you to make that possible. Go to podsurvey.com/firstdegree and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you better. That way we can bring on advertisers that you won't want to skip. And once you've completed the quick survey, you can enter for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's podsurvey.com/firstdegree. podsurvey.com/firstdegree. Thanks for your help. Welcome to Killing Time, hosted by two girls, one goth. Now, today is a very special episode of Killing Time. We have our first guest in the history of Killing Time, and we are so, so excited about it.
Yes, yeah, and we have a long history with Payne Lindsay, who is our guest today.
Yes.
And that history being we went to Atlanta and filmed in his weird little booth in his office. Well, recorded, rather.
Basically sitting on top of each other because it's so small, because that's how a vocal booth should be, and not like recording in Billy's kitchen living room with lots of things for the sound to bounce off of.
Yes, but we are going to, you know, try to dig some details out of Payne, not just, you know, the podcast that he does, but some things from his past. So you're really going to want to listen.
Well, and I will say we did already record this interview, so I do want to give a little, like, I need everybody to listen to the very end of this podcast, because Payne reveals something about his past that is so incredible, so wonderful, so shocking that you just have to hear it from the horse's mouth, you know?
Yeah.
And if you thought you liked Payne now, just wait till you find out about
just
this.
Just wait. Yes.
It's an incredible episode, and we are so excited to have Payne, and we thank him again for giving his time. It was such a wonderful episode, and I hope you enjoy it.
Yes.
We have with us my sneaker adversary, one of the greatest true crime podcasters out there, Payne Lindsay.
What's up, man?
How you doing?
What kind of sneakers you got on today?
I'm not wearing sneakers. Here's the thing.
Can we just weird saddle shoes on
right
now?
I know we're going to get into like the lighterness of our podcast in a bit, but can you guys explain this whole sneaker back and forth that you've had on Instagram? Because it's been a thing.
So, you know, Payne is a sneaker guy.
Yes.
You see him, he loves the sneakers. And for some reason, I started getting into sneakers because
of me.
It wasn't because of you, but Universal Monsters made these sneakers, and they had like Frankenstein sneakers. It was like, you know, so I bought them, and I tagged them. I was just like, you're it. And then it just went from there. And I've been buying sneakers, and to be honest with you, I wear them maybe like once.
Isn't that what like a sneakerhead does?
The Jurassic Park ones that
you're
I got.
Is it just sleep to win? My sneaker collection?
Is it just to win? You just want to beat them.
It's just to mess with
you
Payne.
You just want to play.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I just want to play with Payne.
I'm game. I got some sneakers on right now.
You do have.
Yeah. I wore them just for you, Billy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think when you're like late to the sneaker game, the person that brought you in is always going to win.
Mm-hmm.
So you're always.
Oh, believe me. I know I'm.
Also, Billy, you don't wear sneakers almost at all.
I know.
Like I've. Truly, this is alleged sneaker game because I've never seen you in a pair of sneakers.
I still have them in my closet, though.
Seems like it's seems like it's a superficial.
Are you just buying them and taking them back just to take pictures?
Yeah. Taking a pic, taking them back.
I'm doing it for the gram, being like, yo, Payne, your move, Payne. And then I just
immediately take them back.
Honestly, that would track.
So there's that. And then also you honing in on my guy.
What guy?
You know who I'm talking about.
Which guy? There's a lot of guys.
He doesn't seem to know.
There's a few different guys.
There's a lot of guys. Patrick.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So now Patrick from True Crime Obsessed. Yes. Apparently, you were trying to convince him to watch Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
And then then he said, did you write, like, if you don't watch it, I'm going to break up with you or something?
I did
like
write that.
You did write that.
Oh.
Yeah. Wait,
then I learned that you were also his boyfriend, too. So I was like, oh, well, I guess I'm not that special.
We get neglected because we're women.
And I said yes. And then,
I'm
then
used
somebody,
to it.
Then somebody said, where's Tim Pillieri and all this? So, yes.
He's awesome.
We love Patrick.
What I see happening between the two of you is you just trying to do all of the things to be accepted by Payne.
Oh, absolutely.
A friendship.
Payne already seems to like you.
I know.
Allegedly likes you.
You don't have to try so hard.
Yeah. Yes, but you know what?
Yes,
When I saw him, when I saw his relationship with Patrick, I did get a little bit, you know, territorial.
Did you?
Okay. Well, maybe a you and Patrick thing.
I think it's an us thing.
I don't know
we're going to have to work that out. Yeah.
The three of you can have a Jello wrestling match.
The other man.
I'm sure he'd really
love
that.
Yeah.
Patrick's going to win, by the way, between all three of you.
Patrick will win.
100%.
Yeah, he beat her ass.
So, Payne, obviously, the reason why you're here, I mean, obviously, you've become a friend now of the podcast, but we want to talk about season 3 of Up and Vanished.
Okay.
And I think an amazing place to start would be, obviously, we've seen the disparities between the coverage of certain cases in the United States that get the most attention. And I think it's amazing that you decided to delve in and use your platform to talk about a case where these type of cases are generally not given the due or the attention that they deserve. So is that a deliberate choice? Like, tell us about how you came across the subject case of season 3.
I mean, you said it pretty perfectly, to be honest. I think that because Up and Vanished became such a big platform, that to me it only felt right to be able to use it to spotlight a case that would normally be just less covered in the media. I mean, we've been talking about missing white women for decades since time, you know? But there's plenty of other people missing out there, all walks of life, that don't get the same kind of coverage. And so for me, it was just checking the first immediate box, like, okay, this is automatically, no matter what happens, if I find the killer or if I find Ashley, whatever happens, I can at least give this case more attention than it would have ever got before.
Yeah.
And that to me was a great starting point.
How did you come across Ashley's case versus obviously all the other missing or murdered Indigenous women out there?
I just, to be honest, I looked into dozens of them, and I reached out to Kimberly, who is Ashley's sister, and we kind of hit it off right away. And that's also kind of one of the things that I want to make sure is figured out early on is the family going to be cool about me making a podcast about this?
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge, because things get dicey in the middle of these things. So she was great, and she has been a crusader for justice for Ashley, and she's a strong voice in the community, and we just kind of hit it off and just had one of those moments where I just didn't think about it too much harder, and I was like, all right, this is the case I'm going to look into, and I just told her right then and there, and we just kept going.
Did you know, because there are so many layers to the case, did you know about those layers? Did you know about the people that had been murdered that were surrounding her? Did you know about, like, how she had been shot at, like all of that stuff? Did you know about that beforehand?
I really only knew that after my first interview with her.
Wow.
And so there was a lot that I learned. Even I talked to her for like 2 hours, and I learned, I mean, it was so much stuff that, like, I couldn't even tell you what we talked about. I had to, like, go back home and listen to it and be like, oh my god, like, I didn't realize she said that. But she gave me, I mean, countless leads to look into. And yeah, that was also definitely part of it, is that there were so many different layers to the story and different avenues. And really, at the end of the day, so many persons of interest.
Yeah.
And they all, for a good reason. And that piqued my interest because I want to be able to go knock on someone's door and talk to them and not have, I don't want to just have no idea what happened. I want to at least be pointed into a direction where I feel like I can go do something.
And go ahead. I was going to say, thinking about you going and knocking on doors, you are this white guy with bleach blonde hair. You're sticking out like a sore fucking thumb.
Yeah, look crazy as hell.
We're into the hair, by the way. The hair is looking
and you know what? I'm not really a fan of bleached hair on an adult man, but like you might be the only person that it's working for.
I think
so.
Your whole palette,
the sweatshirt is sort of working. The whole thing, nice light palette.
Yes, yeah. He's very neutral.
Well, I'm very pale, if you can't tell. So.
I know, but the hair actually works.
Yeah, usually pale guys shouldn't have a light hair.
Right, yeah.
Honestly, I was skeptical.
Yeah.
But I saw it, and I was like, it does work, but I want to be skeptical of it because I don't agree with it, but it works so much.
There are no other men out there that are looking at pain
this.
Don't copy me, guys.
This is a special circumstance.
This is my thing.
I'm going to go buy some sneakers and then
dye bleach your hair, Billy.
No, it's just pain.
Oh, and for the record, my eyebrows, these are their natural color.
Mm-hmm.
And so something happened when I bleached my hair. All of a sudden, my eyebrows
turned
literally
lighter?
Look like my hair.
Mm-hmm.
But my natural hair color is like dark brown.
Yeah.
Mm. And
this really
I
worked,
don't know.
Then.
I'm just like, okay.
Meant
like,
to be.
Your
meant
natural
to be.
Blonde is just coming out.
It is. I'm just channeling it.
I love it. Okay, so you look like you do. You're going up in rural Montana, knocking on people's doors on a reservation. Like, how intimidating is that for you? And were you ever just nervous to stick out so much during your investigation?
I definitely get nervous. I think that I have to try to use who I am, which may be really different from the people who live in this community, to my advantage. I think that even from just the standpoint of knocking on somebody's door and they're just, their first impression is probably like, who the hell is this guy? And then the way that I start talking to them, they're probably like, okay, now definitely who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
And so it's almost like a little bit of confusion there. And I think that when it comes to talking to persons of interest and suspects and stuff like that, I find that to be, if you do it right, it could be an advantage because I know all about them, but they're still trying to figure me out over here.
Ooh.
And as I start talking to them, and I'm being genuine, I'm being myself, I'm being nice and open to them. But I think that's maybe my look is a little off-putting, but I think it's okay. I definitely don't roll up there looking all like fresh from the city or anything.
Totally. No, and what you said about this idea that when we roll up on people in any investigative podcast, you know, it's like, we have researched them. We know where we're going. We know who we're going up to. We know our angle. We know what we want to know. They are totally caught off guard. And that is such an interesting part of it. You know what I mean? And it's like, especially approaching people at their homes, like there is this inherent sort of danger about it because people feel like protective of them, you know, especially something as we're dealing with something as serious as murder, you know, and you're asking questions for a reason. They're connected in some way. They were maybe there that night or knew something. Have you found every time when I was listening to every episode of the season so far, I was like, there's no way they're going to talk to him. Like, have you found that generally, like, people are with you in wanting to solve Ashley's murder and wanting to contribute what they can? Or did you find more resistance than cooperation in that way? And obviously, we only listened to what we know about, right? So, like, there could have been a million no's at every door, at certain doors that we don't know about. So, like, I think as a whole, like, the people on this reservation, are they wanting answers or have you been met with resistance?
I think they all want answers. I wouldn't say that everybody wants to talk to me. I think that's also one part of the podcast that I didn't really put in there too much because it just becomes boring after a while. Just how much time I spend trying to convince someone to talk to me.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
And it may come across as like, they were willing.
Trust me.
And then I met him at a coffee shop, and it was great.
On Unraveled, there are certain people that took us literally years to convince.
Right.
You know, you don't want to put like hung up calls and in unanswered doors in a podcast. Yeah. Like that doesn't really do anything for anyone. But like, I don't know, the energy there, what is your sort of read from a sociological perspective? Like, based on outside reservations? Like, have you noticed a difference?
I mean, it's completely different. And I'm very clearly an outsider, mm-hmm. and they have good reason to be hesitant about outsiders coming into the community, especially this white guy with bleached hair who wants to solve a murder in this town.
Yeah.
So there's obviously resistance no matter what, but I think that what I found, for the most part, everybody has been, you know, I've made a lot of friends, I've kept up with people, and, you know, just kept talking to people and listened to them and be vulnerable to them too. And that's kind of the, I feel like if I'm not willing to be vulnerable with them, then I couldn't expect them to open up to me either. And so I think that's one more thing that maybe people wouldn't get just from listening to a podcast episode is how open I end up being to them, whether it comes across that way or not in the sound bite that you're hearing. You know,
I mean, one of the things that, because we got that question when we like knocked on James Burke's door for Unraveled, or Jason Christopher Hughes's door for the second season. And it's, people ask us, like, were you scared? Were you frightened for your safety? And I was like, no, I never even thought, entered my mind. When I heard you dealing with these people on something that is so, you know, a different landscape, I was listening to you going, fuck Payne. Like, what does he have behind him? Does he have backup? Like when you're going through Vernon's phone.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's just like,
it's tense.
It's very so tense. It was really,
I think I was literally sweating while I was listening to it.
And he's going through and going like, all right, you don't have the messages. And he's like, yeah, I delete all my messages. And
you're just like, convenient.
Yeah. I was like,
right.
I'm like, who deletes their messages? Yeah. Especially on Facebook. How do you even delete? Like iPhone, it's very.
I don't delete any messages.
I don't delete any messages either. Yeah.
Me either. But like on an iPhone, it's very easy to delete an individual message on iPhone. But like, I don't know how to delete an individual message on Facebook Messenger on my computer. Maybe on the app.
You haven't had a reason that you really needed to look into it.
Right, but I'm just saying, it doesn't seem easy to do or convenient to do. So I'm always suspect when people do that.
Yeah, and like you're standing there with him, you actually have his phone, mm-hmm. and you're vulnerable out there, mm-hmm. you know? And it's just like, and the interesting thing is that because obviously we all follow each other on social media, I know that you've been to these places. Like we follow you on Instagram, you're showing yourself in Montana, you're doing goofy pictures
He's
or whatever.
Up to something.
But he's just doing his thing. But meanwhile, when you know, you're obviously not going to show what you're actually doing. But meanwhile, what you're doing is you're putting yourself potentially at risk because you're talking to people that potential. You know, I remember like one of my first cases where I went out and I started talking to people in Bedford-Stuyvesant, and the cops are like, you shouldn't have done that. You probably talked to somebody that either is the killer or knows the killer, and you could be dead right now. And it's just like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Is that like during that moment when you're looking through his phone, like, was that the scariest moment that you had doing the whole thing? Is it something that doesn't even make it on the podcast? Or is there like another notable moment where you're like, holy fuck, I'm like shitting my pants.
So that was not the scariest moment to me. I think in moments like that, it took so long and so much energy and time to get to where I was in this RV with them there. And they were in my world now.
Yeah.
They were in my RV and we're here. We've been chatting up. We've been friends. We've been laughing. And I'm like, let me see your phone. Like, I mean, if you want to help me out, then that's not that weird. Yeah. I'll show you my phone. There's not going to be that much interesting the stuff in there for you.
It's just going to be your name Googled 100 different times.
Yeah, just me checking Twitter to see what people are saying about me.
You know? All the research. Yeah, exactly.
But that was very uncomfortable. And even listening back, I was like, man, I was so in the zone in that moment.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you have to, like for me at least, I have to enter this sort of mindset where I just, in the moment, I'm not fazed by it.
Yeah.
But when it's all said and done, we're back to the Airbnb, you know, 2 hours away. I'm like, oh, what the
fuck? Yeah, it's the adrenaline.
I'm like, oh,
yeah.
My God, that was crazy, right?
It's really,
everyone's like, yeah.
It's really hard, though.
You know, and one
it's
of the
really
things,
hard.
One of the things that you bring up is imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting because, like, listen, I've been doing this for 2 decades. I still have that. It's just like, who am I to be doing this?
Sure.
But the bottom line is that nobody else is doing it.
Right.
So if nobody else is doing it, you're the guy.
Also, I would never know you felt that way unless you told me that.
Yeah. No, I think it all the time.
Based on your work, it doesn't seem like you'd feel that way.
I think it all the time. I just, just like, wait a minute, like, shouldn't there be like a professional that's doing this? It's right. Like, no, you're the guy that's doing this because nobody else cares and nobody else is doing it.
Exactly.
Also, and that's it's a what classic you're doing. Example too of like, no one knows what they're doing. They're figuring it out along the way. Yeah. And I mean, you've owned this from the beginning. You're like, I was a filmmaker guy. Like, I just got sucked into this. And now because you have this platform, like, you're not going to waste it. So you're like, I'm going to pick the right cases. Yeah. But we're all just figuring it out along the way. Everybody, literally in every industry. Because everything we tackle in every job is different. But you're doing an amazing job with it.
Thank you.
Truly.
But I do love how you brought it up on the podcast, because when we had all of our like questions from our Facebook community and stuff, there was a couple different questions about that one statement.
Yeah.
And it's just so interesting because I think it's relatable to anybody. But also for you, like specifically in this one case, like, do you feel even more imposter syndrome because of this specific case?
Yeah. I mean, just because it's such a sensitive issue to talk about. And, you know, if you wanted to take me down, the first thing you'd say is, what, why is this guy telling the story? And blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you know, and I get where those questions come from, but I'm like, because I'm going to give it all that I fucking got.
Yeah.
And I want to do the right thing with what I have. I already do this now. This is who I am. This is what I've built. And so just because it may be successful doesn't mean that I don't feel like, you know, what the hell am I doing sometimes? I think that, and that's universally relatable. And that it's funny because that segment, I was so 50-50 on putting that in the podcast. I was like, I'm probably not going to do it. I was like, because I felt kind of embarrassed about it. Like,
yeah.
I kind of felt like
it's vulnerable.
It's vulnerable. Or that someone would misinterpret it and be like, oh, he's making it about himself. And I'm not. I'm just trying to be open and just like be able to talk to you how I really feel.
But also, I think that you talking about it, it's like you're talking about it before somebody else is going to talk about it about you, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
Like, you're like, I'm going to acknowledge it now before somebody else is going to give me criticism of like, why is like a white guy throwing themselves into like a case?
Absolutely.
There's no way to appease or please everyone, even if you're doing the most valiant sort of altruistic shit that you can, people will find things wrong with it. So it's like you're doing your best and you're doing an amazing, amazing job. So another question we had, this is my question, personally, actually. So obviously, like, we understand very clearly the neglect that our government, our federal government has given to like reservations. So what is the biggest difference you've noticed as far as like the neglect of Ashley's case? As it relates to like sort of resources dedicated to the search for her killer, things like that. I mean, because obviously like a lot of cases are neglected, you know, people of color's cases are neglected who don't live on reservations, but have you noticed something different?
Or even with the Gabby Petito stuff coming out recently, it's such an interesting like
disparity.
Yeah. Between the two, especially as your case or as your season is airing.
I think on reservations, it's just a complete clusterfuck because there's all these different agencies involved and the FBI is involved and there's the tribal police and another agency over here. And it almost seems like they all kind of pass the buck to each other. They all kind of point fingers at who's responsible. And so someone will go missing or someone will get murdered. And the steps that you would normally take if someone got murdered in a big city don't even happen right away. It's just like this. Such a mess in the communication that alone causes problems. I also think that the local law enforcement should have more money to bring in people from the community who give more of a shit about their job and feel empowered and motivated to solve crimes that are damn near impossible to solve.
Right.
I mean, I would do terribly at making $20,000 a year trying to solve a murder in Montana. I don't know how they even do it. But it's like, I think that there's a million things wrong with it. But I mean, I think funding for local police to be able to do it themselves, I think, is probably a good place to start.
Yeah.
And maybe just the FBI keeping their nose out of it, unless they're going to go in there and actually solve something.
Totally.
You know?
Totally. In this case in particular, it's so fascinating. And I'm wondering, have you ever heard of a case, researched a case, or dealt with a case where you're looking into this case and you found so many murders connected to the case? You know what I mean? Like, as I'm listening to the podcast, I'm just like, okay, Big Al is also murdered. It's just like, what have you made of that? And obviously you found more murders that were connected to players in this case in the more recent episodes. Like, what were your thoughts there?
I think it's just a borderline lawless place. And it's the literal Wild West.
Yeah.
And people who, I mean, bad people, however you want to call them, they can get away with doing bad shit. And it happens more often because of that, because they can get away with it, because no one's stopping them. And so even though it's a very small community with not that many people, the rates of missing and murder people are way higher because they're just able to get away with it. And you know, you don't have that same problem in most big cities in America.
It really did seem, as I was listening, I was like, it's how they solve problems. It's like, instead of just dealing with, it's like a problem solve is like, it's easier to murder someone than deal with the problem.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is so alarming. Like, because the magnitude of murder, I think, it's massive, obviously. And it just felt more casual there. And I don't know if that's just me listening or I'm like, wait, people, all these people are murdered? You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know what to make of it.
No, even the way they talk about it. Like, oh, yeah, he was murdered too. And you're like,
Wait, what?
Whoa, what?
And nobody did anything
exactly.
about it.
Exactly. And I'm like, to me, I'm like, that's crazy. Like, to me, the thing that messed me up the most was Vernon's cousin going missing.
Yes.
And that happened when we were out there. Well, I'm like, someone's just literally just gone missing since we've been here.
It's what we were talking about before
the last episode.
Like,
what? I think we listened to. We're like, wait, what is happening? And that's still unsolved, right? Well,
it is. It is. Yeah.
We don't want to give away any of that.
Well, they're both still unsolved. Spoiler alert, they're still unsolved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
have you gotten any crazy? Do you have a tip line personally? Or how do people like write in if they have information?
So we have two billboards up in Browning right now. And they're just missing posters with a reward of $50,000 for information that leads to an arrest in Ashley's disappearance.
Right.
And so the only places that that number is there, because I don't want a bunch of random listeners calling in and just being like, ooh, I just wanted to see what the voicemail sounded like or whatever.
We've got some calls,
but like I know that whoever calls that number is either got it from someone in the community.
They saw the billboard. Yeah.
So like I'm trying to do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Smart.
There's also a bunch of other ways to reach me. And they reached me there too.
Right.
Just email, Instagram, whatever. But yeah, as far as the number goes, I thought about putting it out there, but I'm like, what's the benefit in that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, the person who knows what happened lives right here and has probably already seen this billboard.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Have you gotten any worthwhile information since the podcast has aired?
I actually have. Yeah. I mean, in the first week that we put the billboards up, we got like 7 voicemails and we're still following up on the stuff, but information I'd never heard before, and that would definitely change Ashley's last couple of days and where she potentially was and stuff like that.
So where is Up and Vanished going, season 4 and beyond, do you think?
It's hard to say. I mean, after season 2, there was a moment where I was just so exhausted from it that I told like everyone around me that I'm never doing Up and Vanished season 3. And everyone's like, yeah, you are. I'm like, no, I'm really not. And I guess I got over that or something.
It's addictive.
Was this all done over the pandemic? Or did you start it before?
No, this was done with masks. And I mean, we first weren't even allowed to go to the reservation at all.
Well, I do remember seeing pictures of you while I had only seen Alexis for months, and
we're
like, why?
Hanging out outside during the pandemic.
Doing?
Yeah.
Oh, I've been traveling literally since June of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that I'm proud of that. I'm just saying that to work.
No, but you're working. No, but I was like, is
I was
Payne partying in Montana? Like, what's he doing?
Yeah.
Your intentions. Like, we didn't know what you were doing at first. Like, who knows why you were in Montana?
It's part of the mystery.
So you got to play it up.
Yeah.
That being said, you did do a season 3.
I did.
And do you feel as depleted after this one? Like, do you see more seasons?
I think I've just learned a lot with just for myself on how to deal with the information, the way that it makes me feel, how to compartmentalize certain things, and just get better and sharper at focusing on the things that matter, because it's exhausting to waste your time doing stuff that doesn't matter. And there's only so much time in the day, yeah. Not to mention that you're, you know, half the time dealing with people who've been through something really tragic.
Mm-hmm. The and bedside so, manner. It's you know, like to be to deal with people.
I can't just shoot the shit like I'm no. doing
deal
right
with
now.
Deal people in pain know? is a like is a daunting thing. And they deserve all the compassion and empathy in the world
exactly.
and patience.
Yeah,
frankly.
And I want to be able to give it to them.
But we can't lie and say that that doesn't like take a toll on somebody with empathy. It does, because you're just like, shit, how the fuck do I fix this for you? Mm-hmm. You know, it takes a lot out of you.
And I'm mostly kind of an introverted person. I have extroverted times, but that stuff exhausts me. Like,
well, I think that there is something. I hope I'm not mixing up two different podcasts, but I think that there was, you know, you listen to like 15 podcasts at one time.
Yeah, it's totally fine if you do.
That there was somebody that was covering the case like from the area, and she was talking about that, like how it takes a toll on the community as a whole.
Yes.
That was your podcast, right?
It was my podcast.
It was one of the first episodes, and she was talking about the generational pain,
right.
Really. And she was saying how like, because she was also from that community. I think she's a professor now. Are we talking? That's probably it was one of your earlier episodes.
I think
we're like, are we right?
Talking about Shannon Newth, who is with the news in Great Falls, Montana.
Right. Yes.
She's great. She's like a morning anchor there. But yeah, I was trying to ask questions like that because I feel like that's what you don't get in most true crime documentaries, is just more humanizing elements of it all. It's almost like the people who are putting it together are just puppet masters, and you don't really see them, or it's just a very limited view of what it takes to get to the truth. And to me, that's more interesting. I want to be able to tell, obviously, the story of me hopefully finding out what happened to Ashley and Ashley's story, but all the players involved, you know, they're all interesting humans. And, you know, I try to find those little pieces and be able to highlight that, because it makes people connect with it more, and just feels better as a listener, I feel like.
Totally. Now, is there anything, that's basically our questions for the serious part of our podcast. Is there anything you have left to add that you want to say about season 3?
You asked me earlier about if the me going through the phone thing was the scariest thing I've encountered.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it's not. And the scariest thing that I did encounter has not aired in the podcast yet. Probably won't till towards the very end. But I'm usually not scared, like you were saying, Billy, but I, this time I knew enough about this person to know that he would do something stupid, like kill me.
Holy shit.
You know? And
pain.
So,
I mean, you're so dangerous.
I know.
I don't
crazy.
Know what to say.
Yeah. But that was definitely nerve-wracking, and it happened, it unfolded pretty much exactly how I thought it would.
I cannot wait.
Well, you're still here, so not exactly how.
Can we get a sneak peek?
No.
There is a...
I'll email your people. We'll see.
Where are we at in this? You know, because I have what's in my head, and I have what's in the podcast.
We just aired... It was... Vernon's cousin died, right?
I haven't checked my podcast app.
So you know that... You know Sam fell asleep, and
Do you... Okay, here's my question. Do you believe Sam? Do you believe Sam's story? As a listener... I did, but like, I'm also too skeptical. I'm a huge skeptic, obviously. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't believe literally anything anyone says, but I was like, his delivery of his story was like, he wasn't trying to protect himself, because his shit sounds bad. I'm like,
right.
He's like, I was partying with her for days. I'm like, you sound guilty. I'm like, he wouldn't do it if he was trying to be cagey.
He was like doing drugs for days and days and days and wasn't sleeping. Like, that is probably what somebody that was all fucked up would do.
No one knew Ashley's gone. No one would know that unless he shared it.
That's true.
So it's like, to out himself there, I just believed him. I just did. I don't know why. I could be wrong. And also, that wouldn't hold up in a court of law. It's just he said, she said, but it's just like, he sounded sincere to me as someone who's like dealt with lots of people who are fucked up.
I do believe Sam.
Yeah.
And going into it, I mean, on paper, it's just the worst shit ever. I'm like, okay, this guy fell asleep and she disappeared. Yeah, right.
I just laid back but in my car, and then
sometimes
she's gone.
Stuff like that happens.
It happens all the time.
It makes it that much more confusing.
Also, the way he explains it, he's like, yeah, she had disappeared before when we were partying. She disappeared for 6 hours at a time. So it was like, we all don't party like that, so I don't think we get it.
That's what I'm saying. It's like,
we don't do drugs.
We don't do drugs and stay up for days on end. Like, you fall asleep at random places and just wake up and shit happens.
I was also mesmerized by his whole thing. It's like, just don't sleep and you'll see. And I'm like, tempting. And honestly, if I can get a month off at some point,
he also asked to, like, he was like, I smoke weed. And like, I cut this out, but he was like, you want to do a dab with me?
Oh my
God. I was like, man, me doing a dab with Sam right now, probably not advisable.
Not advisable.
I was like, maybe next time.
Hey, you know, investigative journalism would have allowed it.
Hunter S. Thompson would have been all
like,
about it.
Seems like I need to understand this better.
I'll do a dab with Sam. Not my first visit.
It would be very immersive.
Remember, you had a gun pointed at me earlier.
I like this guy, though. He's like, it's like apocalypse, but fucking tons of tech for like security. I envisioned it. I mean, I didn't see it, but I was like, this is good shit.
Have you ever wondered what the stars have to say about your favorite artists and writers? Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa, where I, your host and astrologer, Issa Nakazawa, read and interpret astrological birth charts of luminaries like W. Kamau Bell, Gia Tolentino, and so many more. You'll discover how astrology can unlock fascinating insights about these stars, and who knows, maybe you'll learn a little bit more about yourself. Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, there's no reason to feel sad or guilty about the things you aren't using anymore. Whether it was a fancy dress you wore to a gala, expensive heels that only go with one of your outfits, or that crossbody bag from when you were in your music festival era. Somebody out there wants what you don't. And the real world makes it easy to get it to them. When your past becomes their future, everyone wins, especially the planet. For the real real, Earth Month isn't just another month. It's what they do every day. At any given moment, they're finding new homes for over 1 million unique items within their community of 35 plus million people. They're the largest luxury reseller in the world and making a tangible difference towards a more sustainable future for fashion. Resale reduces the amount of fashion waste in landfills, lowers greenhouse gas emissions, and offers an alternative to the cycle of consumption propagated by fast fashion. The RealReal has kept over 37 million items in circulation and out of landfills. This month only, new shoppers get 20% off when they shop on therealreal.com using code FIRST. That's therealreal.com using the code FIRST.
Okay, so we obviously had to tell our firstie community that you're coming on the podcast, and I didn't expect the reaction to be the way that it was. I mean, I did a little bit because I know everybody loves you, but it was hundreds and hundreds of comments, many that I had to filter out because I'm like, this is extremely inappropriate to ask Payne. I'll start with the one that was not, it's not inappropriate, but like on any other of a news source, this would be this girl, Ashley Marie. She said, any plans of voicing an erotic novel in the works? Ooh. Because I don't know if you know, but your voice is sexual and it turns many women on, sexual, including myself.
I mean, I'm not opposed to it, but
50 Shades of Pain?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Maybe only if I wrote it.
Honestly, Pain is a little double entendre there.
I know. Yeah. Pain, honestly.
It'd be a big check, I feel
the
like.
The name Pain is like,
just be, yeah.
Sounds like expensive IP to own.
Yeah, yes. It does.
But like, your voice is great.
Thank you.
And your name is very high into my future baby names, by the way.
Is
we were
it?
We were literally talking about this in
Vegas.
There's
not many out there.
We were like, what are you going to name your baby? She's like, I don't know, but Pain is good. I'm like, Pain, I was thinking that. That's so good.
So anyways, we both have kids and name them Pain.
Yeah.
And then you're going to be the godfather.
Their father.
I'm into it.
We're both in relationships, but you're going to be the dad.
That's fine. Yeah, I'll be the other dad. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The other dad.
The namesake dad. That's a thing.
I like it. Anyways, we're going to move on. Okay, so we have a list of questions that, I mean, you're our first guest, so we're going to try it out on you.
Okay.
and see how it goes that we want to ask every guest that we have on Killing Time. So the first question is, what is the case that got you into true crime? And we were trying to debate what it could have been, because was it Tara Grinstead or
I said Tara? I was like, he says on season one that like I was a filmmaker and I just wanted to get it. I picked it sort of because of proximity.
But, or was there
I played devil's advocate and was just like, maybe he was into OJ. Maybe he was into JonBenet.
You mean into true crime as in doing it?
No, as a person. Was the first case that like you're like for example, mine was Heaven's Gate when I was like a kid. I was obsessed with it for some reason. I don't know why.
I think it was probably The Jinx.
Well, the best documentary of all time.
Making a Murderer 2, but
The Jinx though.
And they came out around the same time. That's really when I sort of was sitting there on my couch like, okay, that was just so fascinating to me. And
it was the best twist.
I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to go
you did.
Put something together that made me feel the way that I did that actually moved the needle.
Yeah.
And so that's when season one.
It was funny. Jack and I used to both have the Beverly Hills. It was like the Beverly Hills comparison with a line between two. It's as a true crime producer and like an investigative journalist, it's like that is my goal. The Jinx has always been.
Of course. Because
there's nothing like it. Because it's just blind luck, too.
And you would have development meetings with production companies.
Like, we want our
networks.
Jinx.
And it's like, we want our Jinx. First of all, no shit. That guy's a super villain.
Yeah.
Also, nobody was planning for that to happen.
No, of course
but
not.
But that kind of happened with your first season. Like, the twist ended up like inserting itself into the whole podcast at the very end, but
it's possible, you know, it's not impossible, which is what keeps my drive going to do it again and again.
Right.
You know, how do you feel about the most recent Robert Durst verdict? Have you been following?
He's guilty, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Of the first murder.
Susan Berman. Yeah. Not the first. The wife's,
right.
Because
yeah,
there's no proof.
Definitely guilty, for sure.
But no, I was shocked that ever happened, honestly. I did not think they would ever fully prosecute him, especially with COVID. So it's a big win.
Okay, our second question is, what is your true crime unpopular opinion? Do you have an opinion that goes against the grain about anything that you can think of?
Ooh, I don't know. I mean, I probably have a bunch of opinions that go against the grain.
Any like theories that are the normal theories and you have a different theory? Like anything you think that might...
Like, for example, Alexis and I
like
don't
that
think
kind
that
of thing.
Burke killed JonBenet Ramsey.
No, we do not.
I don't either.
Okay.
Yeah. Billy does.
Billy does, unfortunately.
Really?
Right?
I've actually talked to her other brother.
Yeah.
Oh, you have?
He's reached out to me, too.
John Andrew?
Yeah.
Nothing ever really came of it, but I've talked to him on the phone a few times. I mean, I think Stephen Avery definitely did it.
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
Yeah.
Is that even an unpopular opinion?
I think it's an unpopular opinion for like the normal true crime world.
What do you think
world?
Of Brandon Dassey?
I mean, I think that it feels like he...
Coercion, because an adult was telling him to do something.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think he's...
Yeah.
Bright enough to have done anything elaborate, and it seems like he was sort of roped into the
somebody.
Whole thing and didn't know what was going on, and then it was too late.
Agreed.
Okay, last question is, what is the one unsolved case that you'd like to see solved before you die? Other than, obviously, Ashley's.
I feel like, I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only one who thinks this way, but I mean, JonBenet Ramsey. I mean, what really happened? One. Like, and we'll probably never know, which is...
We'll never know.
It's a stranger. I just want to know which one.
That's an intruder.
It's not in the home. It's an intruder.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Well, let me clarify. It's someone not from that home. Because the garrote just throws it all for me. The garrote.
It really throws
so
it
many
off.
Things.
The tourniquet.
I wanted to jump into our questions from our listeners. Megan Bittner said, what are your opinions on the second season of To Live and Die in LA?
Wait, real quick, before you do that, I have one more that I think we should add. Sorry, before we get into the listener ones, do you think after like all you've done so far in your career, do you think people are inherently good or inherently evil?
Ooh, good question.
I feel like we're bad.
Yeah, we are. We bad.
And I know that's probably not the most popular opinion, and it's I'm not trying to be all super dark about it, but I feel like, I mean, I think we're all fucked up a little bit.
But what makes you say that? Was there a moment or was there just like a, have you thought about this before?
I have. I mean, I just think that I think people are mostly selfish And I think that the people who are not, those are people you need to really, you know, have in your life. And you should strive to be more selfless. But I think that it's almost human nature to just protect yourself and go after what you want. And I think that that can get twisted and distorted sometimes, and people kill people and do messed up shit.
Well, when your back is up against the wall, it's like you're going to do things you would have never done in any other situation.
We're seeing this with the Gabby Petito thing now. Like, those parents are...
Whatever they...
Seems as though they're doing things. They were upstanding members of society till now, you know?
Yeah.
Allegedly. Anyways, go on. Sorry. To the listener questions.
No, I do want to know what your opinion is of To Live and Die in LA with Elaine's mom. And what are your opinions on that whole situation? Because that was the craziest fucking...
Great season.
It's so crazy.
It was so good.
I mean,
great season.
I remember Neil telling me about this like a couple years ago, and I mean, like over dinner, I was like, "Oh, the mom did it." And then, you know, as you kind of unpack it, you're like, "Well, maybe not." I don't know. It's so hard to say, and it's hard to like look at somebody and say, "Is this how they should be acting?" And yada yada yada. And people act differently. Sometimes people also just do weird shit. Yeah. And like that, it sometimes there's nothing behind
men.
It. I feel like if I was ever roped into something, they like would go dissect my life. I'm like, this guy definitely did it because look, all this weird shit
no
he did.
Yeah.
Unrelated, but like,
me.
Why would he act this weird?
Oh,
like, I don't
know.
I'm just
so
weird.
Fucking guilty. If someone dug into my shit, or yours, Billy, in fact, there's honestly like,
rope me into
this. I don't do weird shit.
No, you're fine.
I'm too normal.
But that's the thing. It's like, I'm just like,
it's so true though. People do weird fucking
shit.
They
Park, do. Susan Park is a bad mom.
Yeah.
Susan Park is from an abused home.
Yeah.
And I think people need to understand how nuanced that is. Even professionals can't understand each fucking sick person. And there's no way to know.
Yep.
There's no way to know. My instinct is no. My instinct is that she's a terrible mom in an abusive household. But no.
Do you have
that
opinion?
Seems more likely to me.
Yeah.
That's where I would lean.
Do you have opinions on who you think did it?
Honestly, no. I just think that, just to kind of piggyback off of what you just said, that all the oddities surrounding her come from her upbringing and who she is. And objectively a bad mom, but maybe she didn't do it, you know?
But also bad is, okay, I want to just say this real quick. Bad is hard. Like, she was also raising her alone. We don't understand all these circumstances.
Well, in a cycle of abuse.
And the
so
dad was
things.
There with money who's not involved. Like, honestly, Susan could have been doing the best she can given being a single mom is something I cannot underestimate. And what that does to mental health, truly, I don't know.
I couldn't imagine. That's why I'm saying people do weird shit, and you never know.
Weird shit.
You don't know the complexities of every single person you're talking to and what they deal with inside their head and all that kind of stuff. And
well, it's like if you pull up every text message that anybody's ever had,
out of context,
weird...
it looks real bad.
Oh, I definitely
I'll say
got
that
some
for
real
sure.
bad ones.
Same.
We all do. And you're like, wait, I was blacked out when I said that. I can't be held accountable.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah.
Okay, I have two more questions.
Great.
Okay. One comes from Wendy DeGraff. She says, we need a recipe for your grandma's cowboy cookies. I know you're not going to give it to us, but like, can you tell me how they taste?
Okay, so.
And like, why didn't you bring us any?
I'm a fan of like soft cookies fresh out of the oven, you know, like chocolate chip, still warm.
Ooh.
Yes.
That's like, that's my thing.
Sure.
Now, these are not that, but they're still really good.
Have you ever tried the batter? I'm a batter gal. I don't.
I
like
have
a,
had the batter. It's also
like a,
delicious.
I don't like a baked good. I like a pre-cooked baked good.
So usually like a cowboy something, like a cowboy bark has a bunch of different shit in it.
It's chunky.
Is it like, a, is it there
has
like
a bunch
pretzels?
Of stuff, but she grinds it up. So it's
Ooh.
All like, there's no like
and
big like
processor.
Nut you're biting into or something gross like
ground
that.
Ground nuts.
It has pecans in it, but they're blended up. So they're. You don't really...
Dust
there's
a
no
pecan.
Exactly.
Whoa.
And here's the thing.
This is monumental,
we
I think.
We eat them frozen.
What?
We put them in the freezer.
Frozen good.
And we eat them out of the freezer.
I do
and
like a frozen
best
chocolate.
That way. Which sounds absolutely crazy, and it is crazy. But coming from someone who likes a warm cookie, this is the only other cookie that I like that isn't that. And it's crumbly, but like something about it being cold and frozen...
And,
you have
also,
one and you have to have like five
more. The nostalgia of it being your grandma's cookie.
Also
like,
that.
There's that.
Yeah.
Well, and then you
it
had...
It could be garbage and you'd be like, grandma, this is the best cookie. Like,
yeah,
the warm childhood memories.
Of course.
You had your, it was a competition for reviews or something on iTunes, and then somebody won them. Did you ever, have you sent them out to this person?
Oh, I got to do that. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, and have you, like, have you checked and had their feedback to see if it was just you are so biased of your own grandma's cookies?
Well, they told me they loved them. Okay. But I mean,
but they're also,
I guess,
a super fan.
It would be kind of rude if they were like, these suck, but
fuck
thank you.
Fuck you and fuck your grandma.
Which, I mean, it's been whatever.
Which would be
like,
terrible.
I think they liked them. Like, yeah. I mean, my grandma is super pumped to send out a new batch.
Wait,
I
loved it that you had in the first episode. It was so
great.
Cute.
Yeah, I was so like, I'm just going to call my grandma just off rip and just see what happens.
Oh, what a
you
doll.
And your grandma could have a podcast.
We could.
Like an advice podcast or something.
Something.
Okay, I'm going to leave it with this question because I do not understand what it means.
Perfect.
Comes from Stacy, and she says, was Pain really part of a boy band?
Yes.
And can
you
elaborate
on
this?
Context?
Where do I start?
What was the boy band? When was it? How old were you? What
Wait,
happened?
How old are you?
Was it
and can you
impact?
Share a single with us?
How old are you?
I'm 33.
Okay. So you're our age. When was the boy band?
Not my age.
So
not
back
Billy's
in
age.
Like...
Is anyone Billy besides a founding father?
The short version of the story is right out of high school, I started making parody music videos that I was like shooting and putting myself and my friends in.
Did
and
you upload them online?
Yeah, they're all on YouTube.
Are they gone?
And stuff. No, a lot of them still there.
Oh. Pain.
Oh. I know what I'm doing
I
this
totally
afternoon.
Out, exactly. Can myself.
Can we cut one in right now?
Go for it. Yeah. There is a. You could spend at least a couple hours looking at some of this shit.
Oh my god, I can't wait.
Yes. But that eventually evolved into making original songs and original music videos.
Oh.
And
are they good?
Some of them are okay. I mean, I cringe a little bit now, but. Some of it is not that bad. It was more like I was like kind of like a pop singery rapper dude, you know,
I
back
can
in
see
the
that
age of
like
Linkin 303
Park?
And like
oh, 303.
Those kind of things.
Okay.
Right?
Oh,
303.
Right. So
like panic,
it's got a lot
panic,
of those vibes.
Like a panic 303?
No, 303 is completely different than
303 is like
303
don't
is like
trust
rap.
Us.
Pop,
yeah, yeah,
punk.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
That's kind of the vibe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I did that for a long time, and you know, we made money, and we, you know, we had record deals on the table, we turned them down and stayed independent.
Wait, what was your band called?
It's called
your group.
Right Side of the Tree.
Right Side of the
I'm
Tree.
Gonna regret, I'm gonna regret saying that.
What's the wrong side, Pain?
Right side of the
tree. You don't
want
to know the wrong side.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
I don't even know what that means. What does it mean?
It's
is
literally
I don't know about?
The dumbest thing ever. I was just drunk at my lake house with my friends and running like full speed down to the water, and I was like not looking. And then there was a huge spider web like right here. And I was like, go to the right side of the tree.
Oh,
and
I
thought like in that moment that I was like, oh my God, I figured it out. Like, that's it.
My destiny.
It. Right side of the tree. And they're like,
totally.
Really? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then,
listen,
here I am.
Wow.
Having tried to come up with band names, that's a
oh, dude. Yeah,
one.
Those are always hilarious.
Well, none of them make any sense.
Anything's a band name right now.
I love that so much. Thank you for ending this on such a high note with that story.
Of course.
Love this.
I appreciate it so much.
We love this, Pain. This is a true delight.
I know. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, guys.
Coming. Did you have more fun than us or as much fun?
I think I had as much fun. I feel like.
More was the right answer, but
yes. Oh, okay.
I'm like, what kind of question is that?
Well, I don't know how much fun you had. So, I mean, if you had like this much fun, I'd be like, well, probably about the same.
She
know?
Has been drinking for 2 hours longer than you.
Then
you had more fun.
I don't know what it's like to have fun at all.
So, all right. So, everybody,
thank you so much.
Follow Pain on Instagram.
Okay.
They're already following us.
You listen to fucking Up and Vanish Season 3.
And listen to Up and Vanish Season 3. And where else can we find you?
I guess just Google me or something. I don't know.
Yeah, look up his boy
really
band. Right Side of the Tree.
Right Side of the Tree.
On YouTube.
Yeah. Don't do that.
I can't wait to do it later.
But oh, my God.
Then you go viral.
What if what if it becomes so big?
Really, it was supposed to be a goodbye.
No, I'm sorry, but no.
We do
what
like
if it
a
becomes
reunion
so big
tour?
That it's like a reunion tour.
Yeah.
You
man,
can open up for my boyfriend is in a band.
I'm sure some of my friends would definitely be down.
Yes. Yeah. We're into it.
I can't wait for this to happen.
We're doing it.
Honestly, Pain, we're coming to your first concert.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
All right.
Well, thanks for coming, Pain.
Thanks, guys.
Well, a huge thank you to Payne for being here with us today. You know, we love doing these episodes with guests. It's our very first one. So if you're listening out there and you know a celebrity or another person in the podcasting world that you want to have on as a guest for Killing Time, let us know, because there might be some people out there that we didn't even know that are true crime fans. So send them our way, and hopefully we can do more of these. It was so fun, guys.
So definitely fun. Thanks, Payne.
Thanks, Payne.
Bye.
Have you ever wondered what the stars have to say about your favorite artists and writers? Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa, where I, your host and astrologer, Issa Nakazawa, read and interpret astrological birth charts of luminaries like W. Kamau Bell, Gia Tolentino, and so many more. You'll discover how astrology can unlock fascinating insights about these stars, and who knows, maybe you'll learn a little bit more about yourself. Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa wherever you get your podcasts.